Obviously, I'm carrying the anchor session for the afternoon, and it's been a long and educational afternoon. And many of you know I'm known in the past for technical overviews that are sometimes complex and have numerical equations. Actually, John Gilbertson and David Ferran gave me the dubious honor about, was it 5 years ago, of in the imaging presentation, the award for the longest title, which is not a typical. So thank you, John. So I like to get my equations out of the way. This is, and of course, the normative Galois tensor, which can be simplified. This is, of course, related to image recognition, and finally, the final Galois field. But not today. Actually, what I'm going to try adding a little levity and less technical rigor, and actually trying to cover the high-level topics. What I think is an important and increasingly important area, which is AP middleware. And it recognizes just the reality that AP, not to be pejorative, but just a reality that lags behind CP in implementation of opportunities of use of information technology to solve incremental needs that arise, that may arise in a speed or fashion ahead of the curve for what many vendors are able to provide. So finally, with my last bit of levity, for those of you who have seen the gold of the Sierra Madre, I've taken the liberty of changing it just a little bit of middleware. We don't need those stinking middleware. And I hope at the conclusion of the hour I can convince you to the converse that actually middleware in some instances is a good thing. So just as a very, very high level overview, the rationale, why even do this presentation, some of the historical differences between AP and CP, and then a high level gap analysis of the various information technology that makes this worthy of investigation, temporizing and permanent aspects of middleware, and then some case studies and examples of things that are relevant and can be done right now. And finally, to change the venue a little bit, most presentations, of course, one goes to and then goes home, and the presentation has exactly a 30 or 45 minute life that begins and ends with the presentation. I'm going to try doing something a little bit different with this presentation. This presentation will start with this meeting here, but I hope it actually takes on an extended life. I've had a number of discussions with Bruce and other interested informaticists, and there really is a need for a publicly available repository for discourse. So Project ATMR, or Anatomic Pathology Middleware Electronic Repository, will be a place where we actually put all the source code in the GNU public license agreement so it's available for free use to hopefully engender discussion and further development in this emerging area. And to start off then with a not entirely unfamiliar quote, first as a show of hands, how many of you have been involved with negotiations for an anatomic pathology information system? That's not a trick question. Okay, now, how many of you can keep your hand up by saying you've seen this quote? And not to be pejorative, because I know there are vendors in the audience, so I mean this in good humor, but I assure you, and I see Rob McMillan in the front, or not Rob, actually you look like Rob, but you're not, okay. Yes, Ray. Yes. The shorter, absolutely. So the reality is that we have a recognition of a gap, and you either wait for vendor solutions, you suffer through not having the functionality, or you look for alternate means. And middleware is emerging as a way of carrying out the third choice, which is alternate strategies. So with the rationale being no single prospective vendor currently offers the full repertoire of locally perceived needs, and that's not meant to be pejorative, that's simply a reality of the increasing complexity and the fact that no one vendor can have all the development capabilities to offer resources and answers to those needs. And no current, new or legacy AP-LIS system offers all possible functionality in the setting of a standalone system. And this will get into the discussion in a little bit of the opportunities for federation and use of best-of-breed solutions empowered by federation. And in fact, the follow-up presentation on Friday we'll be exclusively looking at federation in concert with Dr. Mark Rupport, where we're looking at order entry and then finally results made possible by federation. And finally, then, of course, middleware, while it's very well known in CP, is really just an emerging process in the AP continuum, but this need not remain the status quo. So very, very briefly, if we look at some differences in CP and AP workflow, these are really self-evident, so I don't have to dwell on them for too long. In clinical pathology, items, assets that come into the lab are largely the same, not uniquely, but in many instances, making for then a simplified format for processing of these items. So they're in a form factor as well that's amenable to automation, single-piece workflow. Historical volumes have been high for a long time, hence the recognition early on that information technology, computerization, automation was very appropriate for answering those needs. Finally, there's a recognition of the quantitative reporting model, and then the IT effort and IT capability have been equally distributed between the pre-analytic, the analytic, and post-analytic areas, making for, as we now know in modern lean terminology, value stream mapping, the ability to identify all areas of the value stream chain and apply IT solutions equally, beginning, middle, and end. Conversely, in anatomic pathology, we have some variability in form factor handling requirements. I mean, think about just something as mundane as a 3 by 2 inch form factor, a whole mount prostate slide. You know, we have the larger blocks for them, the specialized chuck, and then the difficulty with filing these. So that's just one example of what really is a litany of variations in process handling that create complexity. So manual handling is implicit in many of the workflow areas, and until recently, volumes were low enough that you could address these needs with paper-based workflow. And in fact, paper-based solutions are not that uncommon. By a show of hands, how many of you are familiar with or have in your AP laboratory a paper-based work list or tracking solution? So see, there's still some, so even today we have manual approaches, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's simply that it's difficult in some instances to remove legacy architectures which are paper-based. And additionally, we have a qualitative reporting model. And most effort focused to this date is on the report generation, the actual mechanical process of assembling the anatomic pathology text report in electronic fashion, with other areas, although to some extent mapped to electronic workflow, underrepresented. So that's a workflow perspective. In terms of culture, we have a long history of utilization of information technology in the clinical labs, and we have less so in anatomic pathology. And also within CP, IT is now considered the standard of practice. You really don't see a lab that's based on paper methods. It's really intractable. Anatomic pathology, conversely, historically there's not been a need for computer skills. And in fact, my experiences at MGH, where John Gilbertson now is operating in my prior position, my experiences with the histology lab 6-7 years ago were interesting in that it was a challenge just to have people remember a username and password. And that was actually more difficult than training them on the workflow. And clearly, the lab has changed light years from then to now, as he has one of the most sophisticated barcode tracking systems in the country. So there can be change, and it can be actually a profound change, but it does take iterative steps, which involves simply the recognition that individuals need to be familiar with computers and have basic computer skills, which is not always the case within anatomic pathology. Also, the proposed IT implementation in any AP setting can be met with at minimum caution, resistance, or outright rebellion. I've seen all three, and don't underestimate the power of resistance to any further forward progress. So the culture in many respects has to be addressed before the technology is brought forward. And then finally, the repertoire of tools. What are the differences? Well, clearly in clinical pathology, we have a rich repertoire with a plurality of both vendor solutions, homegrown solutions, and partnership solutions, which represent knowledge conferred by users of a system that are implemented ultimately by a vendor to make a system more powerful than it was previously. And this partnership is well recognized. Perhaps not as commonly enjoyed as it could be in terms of seeing more partnerships, with some recent articles suggesting that too much of the CP realm is becoming vendor-driven, but nonetheless, there's still significant instances where you can show value added by participation of the client. And it's also important to mention that solutions are now in their second and third generations of design. Very sophisticated, well thought out software workflow and ancillary tracking solutions in terms of both the core software and the middleware that's available for clinical pathology. And there's also a standard model for resulting the data. Conversely, with really all those issues in anatomic pathology, the relative paucity of drop-in middleware solutions from any source, whether it be academic, community-based, or vendor-driven. Typically, AP systems are standalone with the requisite number of interfaces so they can communicate the results downstream, but the notion of bolting on generic software tools is somewhat novel. Not universally, but still somewhat novel. And there's limited anecdotal information on how this can be implemented. So those individuals interested in trying to create middleware solutions can't go to the literature and have as much of a historical reference for what is effective and what is ineffective as one could have with clinical pathology. And then finally, there's no standard model for results reporting. So from a simple conundrum, I can ask all of you, and I would be very surprised if there were a single, maybe Mark Rupert there would have an answer, but if you have a consultation need and you're sending the report to a different institution, well, it's out of network, so in-network doesn't count, how many of you can do that electronically right now with a standard interface? Is there any hands at all? How many would, fax, oh, fax. Okay, how many of you would like to do that? You wouldn't like, come on. Where's your enthusiasm? Raise your hands. No, we really have to get away from paper and FedEx pathology. And I think standard. No, I wasn't including public health because that's funded by, of course, external issues. But that's actually the model that we should emulate. That's a very good point, Mark. Very good point. And I think it's even a more important cogent point because it shows it can be done. So thank you, Mark. Good point. So how in general, this is kind of agnostic to AP or CP, does middleware help extend infrastructure? And again, it's a temporizing measure or is a permanent or semi-permanent role. As a temporizing measure, you can gain local functionality while you're waiting for the next system. You can address urgent workflow and patient care needs while waiting for version patches, upgrades, and platform transitions. And you can allow for flexible iterative modification to your workflow in so-called lean or previously the PDCA cycle, where you want to do small steps and then check on them. Well, if you're waiting 6 months every time for a vendor upgrade, that kind of gets in the way of doing small changes, whereas middleware is quite nimble and in an ideal setting can be changed quickly and validated quickly. In a semi-permanent or permanent implementation, you can gain functionality for a system that you have no intention of changing. So it's a way of gaining functionality without necessarily having to force or compel or ask a vendor to provide something that they may be either unwilling or unable to generate as a new source of capability. And finally, integrate local systems to other devices or information systems that are in some respects out of scope for vendor consideration. And we see this at complex academic centers all the time and more so in community centers that are building regional health information organizations. So the general classes of tools and solutions, perhaps the oldest, but still tried and true and used in many instances where you have absolutely no control over the vendor interface, is a so-called screen scraper, where you have a terminal emulator act as though it were a person and then interact with the application and obtain from the screen that information. Unfortunately, these are very brittle because if the software version changes in terms of screen layout or formatting, you may have a broken interface or broken middleware. Less so a germane issue in modern web-based or Windows-based architectures. This is really a leftover from the terminal realm of systems. But many people still have terminal-based information systems, older SunQuest and PathNet systems, for example, that are terminal-based. Interceptors that monitor interfaces. That way you can gather the data stream without modifying either the upstream or downstream code. Shadow repositories, very effective in circumstances where you already have a relatively slow application and leveraging additional queries against it will slow it down even further. The shadow repository can be updated nightly or in near real time, allowing for then access to the same data set, but by a modern database extraction layer for types of data that are not as time sensitive. Example being management reports that it's okay if it's a day or a couple, or even a week old, and the shadow repository can operate very effectively in that capacity. And then there's standalone applications for turnkey solutions. These are particularly effective in lab workflow and worklist management. Total integrated solutions that may be a customization of standalone turnkey systems as well as integrated solutions. And then finally, custom interfaces and drivers for specialized hardware. And we're seeing an increased number of specialized devices and also media in support of anatomic pathology, namely for the slide labeling, direct slide labeling, label printing, and cassette printing as well. So if you look at enabling technologies that now make simplified AP middleware development possible, we have relative availability of very good quality databases, several vendors that are scalable. The critique of the databases that you'd put on small servers that weren't minis or mainframes was you had bad performance, bad scaling. That's no longer the issue. Simplified web services can now be generated very easily. Natural language parsing and natural language processing with sophisticated rules can be built into these standalone systems. And then finally, with, as I mentioned, AP-centric peripherals and AP-centric media gives new possibilities for changing your workflow. And of course, with the emergence of Lean and Six Sigma in the clinical lab to an increasing degree, you have a similar opportunity to do the same with anatomic pathology. And in fact, that's happening. And finally, then human factors engineering. Often, new equipment will go in the lab without much thought to where it goes, or a new workflow will be put in place or modified without much thought to the most effective way for doing so. And human factors engineering should and necessarily is best to be implemented as part of any type of middleware project. So if you look at the gaps where AP informatics utilization occurs and where we need value, we have to recognize that the combined fields of anatomic pathology represent more than merely a need for glorified text generation and workflow management, and recognize that AP-style lab workflow is being equally meritorious for automation and tracking, even though the volume perhaps is somewhat lower, because our lab volume is in fact increasing, and is increasing at a significant rate. And finally, recognition the lack of automation in AP represents the same patient risks as already well known for clinical pathology. So we have a number of built-in error checks in clinical pathology. Why aren't they in AP? One perhaps hypothesis, well, we've always done it this way in AP. Why change? Well, the reason to change is we know that there are inherent risks and the risks can be mitigated. So going over some simple areas where middleware is compelling, we should have a restart request. We won't restart, obviously, is lab worklist management. And for the next few slides, I'll be showing some examples where germane of how actual middleware can solve some of these problems. And again, to the original comments I made, I hope this will be even more germane because the code backing up these solutions will be available for public use at the conclusion of LabInfotech 2008. So I'm hoping to generate some actual interest in people experimenting with these and starting dialogue with each other and what works and what doesn't work for your setting. So in the absence of electronic worklist management in high volume settings, the higher the volume, you will hit a critical threshold where you lose control of your workflow. And you can have utter chaos when compounded with a busy day, high volume specimens, for example, and a short staff situation. How many of you have seen that? Even if you have electronic workflow in your histology lab where, you know, all hell breaks loose, as they say. Too many specimens, things back up, and the more backed up you get. It's difficult. And if you happen to have paper-based workflow or not complete computerized tracking to see where your bolus of stasis is, it gets very difficult to catch up. So we've really hit the critical threshold in anatomic pathology for many sites where our volume is at a level that not only do we have the risk for workflow failure, but we're hitting a level where the using manual clerical labeling techniques, you hit an irreducible error rate, which in normal studies, three or four of them at least so far, suggested that number cannot be reduced below 0.3% regardless of how much cross-checking you implement. The only way to go lower than that is to implement electronic workflow, electronic asset tracking. So electronic lab order entry is, of course, one of the first enabling steps. And many systems now for AAP have electronic lab order entry, but the problem with these systems is really one of human factors engineering. It's often designed by one or more programmers who probably had minimal or no idea of how a pathologist typically fills out what was previously a paper-based system, the check boxes, which, if designed properly, can be remarkably fast and efficient. Not good from a workflow perspective, because there's a significant chance for loss of paper or incorrect transcription, but highly effective for simplified entry. And even upgraded versions of many anatomic pathology information systems retain the similar arcane order entry, which is slow and cumbersome, where you have to go to multiple screens to order one antibody panel, or one type of stain, and then a blank, and then an H&E recut. And because it's not designed to the actual human workflow, it's slow and it's frustrating, and individuals waste time and make mistakes. In the setting of not being able to change AP systems, we had this circumstance in Boston. I have it now in Michigan for the duration. The solution is to create middleware, temporizing solutions that provide exactly the type of user environment that's required, and at the same time do so in electronic fashion. So you're addressing two needs. One, to have an order, or your orders management start their life electronically to begin with, and number two, to have those orders be created from an interface which is highly intuitive and highly efficient. It saves time for the pathologist, minimizes order entry, and minimizes frustration. So overall user satisfaction of the system goes up. So load the right tool. I think I have one too many open, but I think we'll be okay. Nope, not that one. Not that one either. Not that one. I'll come back to it. Sorry about that. Okay. External system integration. Vendor implementations are often expensive. It can be the source of repeated missed implementation go-live dates. And one of the largest causes for go-live slippages are the actual interfaces that can be either complex versions, variant versions of HL7 2.x, or in some instances, XML interface versions. Middleware, when using standard libraries for XML encoding, some people have described them as integration hubs, allow for uncoupled development of the LIS from the external data integration initiatives. And the typical example would be, of course, specialized external interfaces such as transplantation, operating room management systems, and clinical management systems that require integration that may be out of scope or out of budget for integration with AP systems. Middleware in concert with use of federation allows really for an elegant best-of-breed solution to augment your local repertoire of capability with respect to interfacing between these disparate systems. So it's germane to discuss briefly what federation is and how it can facilitate improved use of middleware. If you recognize that central IT departments now have increasing demands on them by a plurality of various sites and diminishing composite resources to meet these demands, there's a reality that the needs of typical pathology departments by central IT are diminishing. And at the same time, it takes actually less effort and parts less risk to store the data elements within a network within one place as opposed to a plurality of places. So when you tie that in with the second point, of course, which is that ancillary departments are usually the most qualified to house that data, you end up with an opportunity for doing two things at the same time. You remove the complexity across the board within the institution by leaving the data in one and exactly one place within the institution, which is the so-called single source of truth model. John Gilbertson alluded to this in the morning, as federated models are very attractive, but he also pointed out very correctly, they're very, very difficult to do. And one way of augmenting the ability to do federated models is in fact using middleware solutions. Reduced time-consuming rework can be associated with cascading interface changes, and by using federated architectures, you can actually reduce the problem of a plurality of interfaces that make it increasingly difficult to support. So for example, in our operation, we have nearly 38 people for pathology informatics. And over the last 2 years, I've seen an increase in the percentage of our resources directed towards interface support by about 50%. This trend, however, ceased when we started building solutions within the department that were based on federation. So we chose a standard model of data interchange and then built multiple systems based on that same exact standard, where we weren't shipping across the data but providing a view of it. And I'll show you what this looks like potentially at a hospital level. In the setting of extended federation, a user then, with a conventional data model, has the access to a central hospital information system that then gets a feed from many, many sources. And you have a plurality of interfaces that are all different and all require separate support. And this is the expanding universe that makes it very, very difficult to support. In a federated model, if you apply it across the hospital, you have a common service-oriented architecture that can be a SQL or ODBC or an actual web-based services model. And every one of these interfaces is exactly the same. So when you compel your various vendors to use a middleware layer, which is standardized, you now have within your institution or within your department exactly one type of interface to support. Very difficult to get consensus up front to implement this, but once you've done this, you can see that your plurality model for supporting this becomes quite tenable, because one interface is like any other interface. And the distribution model for the information is the web itself. All computers now have web browsers. So it becomes a very, very simple notion of having now just a web aggregation layer to be able then to distribute information. And so by doing a federated model, what you've actually done now is you've shifted the single source of truth from what was traditionally the central repository now to each department that's the owner of the data. And this is highly effective. Difficult, as John Gilbertson pointed out, to implement, but once carried out, highly effective from a modeling and from a maintenance perspective. And again, you can do this at the SQL level. You can also do this at the service-oriented architecture level, which makes this entire data exchange area web-based, which is very, very elegant. You can do federation at the LIS level and include, of course, anatomic pathology. And here again is the opportunity for middleware, the middleware represented by that red arrow. Every interface then in your department can be a single conserved type of interface. And you, then the constraint, of course, is working with your vendor with your for subsystems to interact with your centralized LIS. Of course, this, in a sense, is the LIS of the future, because if you're implementing a federated model like this, what you've really done is you've chosen best-of-breed solutions for every one of these areas. And that gives you the best chance of picking a solution that meets the needs of every particular department, including anatomic pathology. And at the same time, you're using an interface protocol which is conserved across the department, making support much easier. We have done this now at Michigan with 5 of our 32 interfaces. Actually, one of our lead programmers is in the room. Raise your hand. John Hamilton. And this is extremely effective for reducing the complexity of ongoing support. So you could say it's an interface, but it's actually the use of a middleware solution to reach the goal of a federated architecture. And ultimately, what this will have the effect of doing, at least in an ideal world, is create a realm where the centralized LIS is nothing more than an aggregation tool that aggregates in real time the information from the respective single sources of truth. And this then creates a very elegant model where you don't have to worry about reduplication of data across your information system. If you have data in AP, you don't have to worry about whether it's been reduplicated correctly here and then reduplicated correctly in downstream systems. And in point of fact, both Mark Rautbord and myself will talk about these architectures in detail on Friday. So again, finally, with federation at the LIS level, just conceptually, as queries are generated by users, the queries go to the service-oriented architecture bus, various systems, including, for example, AP, and then the results come back, are aggregated, and go to various systems or users, reducing the complexity of support and maintenance, and then making the troubleshooting model for this very, very easy. So a major class of middleware, which perhaps you haven't seen yet at the lab level, certainly not at the AP level, but two things: you should certainly look for it, you should ask for it, and you should consider it, because this is sustainable, whereas the current plurality of disparate interfaces is not sustainable. And as we have increased requirements externally placed on us, public sector, health reporting, environmental surveillance for pathogens, the list goes on and on, which each one of these systems requiring a different type of data feed, this becomes very attractive versus a plurality of interfaces, which is not. Switching topics, again, to another exemplar for middleware, is billing decision support. This is a tool that was built at MGH, and we're re-implementing it at the University of Michigan. It is known as the billing roll-up tool, or BRUTE. Its purpose is to carry out standardized searches on the anatomic pathology information system without that system having built-in capability. So eventually such systems will have this capability, but if they don't, you can create a middleware tool for types of things that are commonly asked for but not provided on a common basis. So, for example, duplicate billing, unsubstantiated stains. So the tool actually can go into the anatomic pathology report and make sure every stain that's billed has been mentioned in the free text using text-based parsing. Looking at the number of times you reported a code, let's say an 88305, and then going to the anatomic pathology report and seeing that, in fact, there are five specimens described so that you're not overcoding, overbilling. And then finally, looking at the fee schedule. So tools like this, which may not be immediately available from a vendor, can be added on quickly and then changed nimbly as the billing codes change, which they do seem to change from year to year. And then so you can be more nimble, perhaps, than some vendors in providing a local solution. And this will be one of the tools that will be on that on the website. Closed-loop clinical, clinical communications of AP results. This will be covered extensively on Friday by Dr. Jeff Myers, my colleague at Michigan. But just basically the concept is, if you look at the current practice, which is we print a report or we send an electronic report out to the downstream interface, the old school of thought was that was the accepted standard of care. We're done. And, you know, in some instances, if we felt it necessary, we would call the clinician to make sure. Unfortunately, on an ongoing basis, patients die as a result of the correct diagnosis being made, but it's lost to follow-up. The clinician never saw the report, wasn't called by the pathologist, and comes back 1 or 2 or 5 years later to find they have widely disseminated advanced disease. This can be prevented. Tools can be built, and these are typically middleware tools, that look for reports that are unexpected and look for the absence in the report of some type of clinical handoff. Dr. Myers designed this tool conceptually. We built it as a middleware solution, and he'll tell you all about it on Friday. And I truly believe it's saving lives. Real-time tracking of workflow. Again, the notion now that we can generate labels on specimen containers, requisitions, barcode labels, blocks and then slides, the details are not important. What's important is we can create now a fiduciary tracking system from front to back that allows for anyone in the lab to know exactly where any type of acid is, whether it's the requisition label itself, the specimen container, the slide, or the block. Some early studies that we did looking at this, it was a mess. And the problem was, of course, that this requires prospective labeling of everything. And we went through like seven generations of labels for slides and blocks. And finally, as a result of significant effort on part of multiple vendors now, there's not one but many solutions that provide for labels that will survive most histologic processing. So you can label things up front in a just-in-time model, and you can have a fiduciary tracking system where every upstream item is labeled. So the labeled requisitions then in turn turn into labeled blocks, which in turn turn into labeled slides. With every cutting station, for example, in histology, generating the labels for the slides in real time based on the block. If you combine that with the rule that you only can have one block on the field at a time, you remove almost entirely the transposition error of the wrong label being affixed to the wrong slide, which is typically done in batch fashion after the fact, when you've generated for the day's work 100 or 1,000 slides, perhaps with pencil or an indelible marker, and now you have your long sheet of labels generated by your LIS, and you have to add the labels manually to the slides. That will generate, as I mentioned earlier, the intractable 0.3 or higher percent labeling rate. Very, very difficult to remove. If you look at some pilot data that we have for something as just mundane as productivity, this is how long it takes, 1.8 minutes on average, to label a slide and cut a slide when you have to look at a paper work list or electronically generated work list from a block to know what label to generate and then put it down and then match it if you accumulate all that time. Conversely, with electronic solutions, it's well under a minute. It's about 0.65, 0.7 minutes. So the speed of generating generating slides goes up considerably, and this is measured over a six-month period. So if you multiply this is just one instance of workflow in the lab, which is slide cutting, across all the other areas where you have manual workflow, you can see that there's significant opportunities, not just for error reduction, but for productivity enhancement. And again, these types of solutions can be carried out as middleware. And then finally, rare event detection, enhancing patient safety. I'll let Jeff comment on this more extensively in his lecture. But again, it's the notion that if you have rare exception protocols, like, oh, when you get this type of specimen, do this, people are terrible at remembering these exceptions because they're low incidence activities. And to say to a pathologist or one of the staff people, you know, even under threat of punishment or bodily harm, be more careful next time, it's just not fair. People are going to forget. This is an ideal setting in which to leverage IT. And IT, with the appropriate rules, leveraged in the form of middleware, can accomplish this very layer of notifying individuals when a rare event has occurred and allowing an intervention. And he'll cover this extensively. There's some decision support tools that are made possible by middleware. Having cancer checklists generated, or protocols that require consistency, and then finally integrated consensus validation, where you want in real time to look at what the current consensus is for a given wording on a document, because the various wording changes. So for example, one tool that we built about 4 years ago is an eShock tool. These reports were used for clinical studies, but this is the general case which proves the point. These would take between 45 minutes and an hour to generate to be consistent with the normative structure. This is a middleware application integrated with the anatomical pathology information system that is knowledgeable about the grading system. It's just a text tool, but allows you then to categorize the severity of what you're seeing histologically. So it doesn't know anything about the histology, but what it does know about is the appropriate terminology to use and the appropriate format. So if you can imagine then a group of pathologists that are using the same tool that generates formatting that's consistent, you would immediately reap the benefits of consistent generation. Typically, this type of functionality doesn't exist out of the box in anatomic pathology information systems. So I've graded fibrosis, the periportal or periseptal interface hepatitis, the lytic, actually lytic is almost never present, and then the various types of confluent necrosis and portal inflammation. So actually, very seldom you see confluent. So, well, sometimes. So anyway, the point is once you've selected your grading for the histology you're seeing, you generate a report which is conserved across all the users of the system, which is ready to go directly into the anatomic pathology system. And you're not limited to just this. There's a simple toolkit that generates these types of reports. So it's only limited by your imagination for the type of reports that you want to make as a consistent practice amongst your group. So if you say, well, for Barrett's, we have a certain wording in our group, you use the authoring tool to generate these consistent reports. And now, very, very quickly with middleware, you've solved the problem, which has been vexing to many, many practices, because the AP systems themselves have not focused on this layer of report generation. It's more of the mechanics of gross, microscopic if present, final diagnosis, comment. But there's opportunity for much more granularity than just that. And these are, I think there will be a whole renaissance of tools now to help us actually build the report. And checklists are certainly one aspect of that because they create consistency. But I think besides that, there's an opportunity for value-added report generation based on the content itself. So content-based report generation, where it's important what particular diagnostic entity you're reporting on, as opposed to just diagnosis, which is generic. Image management is a growing area of integrated solutions within anatomic pathology systems. However, there's a significant area that's not been implemented yet in AP systems, which is the ability to use the imaging itself. And now with the availability of whole slide imaging, we have massive, or at least the potential for massive repositories of image information. And yet, the way we search for cases is diagnostic codes, accession numbers, or perhaps key codes, metadata tags that we've added to the image. But we don't really search the image with the images themselves. And in past presentations, I've shown this, but I'll show this just for completeness sake, the ability to use an image to search for images. So this is a liver biopsy that has moderately severe portal inflammation. And as I move in real time, the algorithm is actually not using text to do searches. It's using the area around this cursor. And these are the cases that are matching in real time. So as a result of technology such as this, middleware solutions will become increasingly powerful for augmenting what we do now just with text with the images themselves. And as we go towards the roadmap that John Gilbertson pointed out this morning of an all-digital department, having tools like this will be very important. Because otherwise, the image information is just coming along for the ride. We're not taking advantage of it from a knowledge management perspective. This can similarly be done for neoplasia. So as I move around, this is a pancreatic adenocarcinoma, significant chronic inflammatory infiltrate. As I mouse over the malignant glands, real-time review and extraction of the similar matching cases, which is very powerful for comparative studies. So you can actually then pull the reports of those prior cases for comparative purposes and see how things match. Are you grading something too high, too low? And for the first time with middleware solutions, you can use the image information itself to carry out that type of query. And then finally, some interesting areas of tools that are under development. Again, these will be posted to the site. The ability to mine the clinical data at the same time as the anatomic pathology data. So this is a prototype extraction tool, which we're working on. It's a web-based tool, which is designed to bolt on to any web-based clinical repository. So with the availability of anatomic pathology data, you could then use that patient identity or the accession number information and mine the clinical information system for all the salient data. This is helpful in a number of diagnostic workups. Certainly, medical liver, for example, you would never sign out a medical liver case without clinical data, and other types of correlate studies where it's helpful to have the clinical information side by side. At present, there are relative paucity of anatomic pathology systems that mine the clinical repository for side-by-side display of such data. Yet that's something we do anyway, right? So many of us have, by show of hands, the clinical system open while we're signing out to get the clinical data. Right. So why not just have the data in a single integrated system? And middleware represents, until the overall repertoire of vendor solutions arrives, a way of quickly getting at that capability. Additionally, the same approach can be used for research investigation. So for those of you that are interested in carrying out pathology searches where your cohort of data requires not just the anatomic pathology data, but associated clinical data, these same types of web-based solutions can bolt on to the clinical repository and concurrently return to you a data set, which is the pathology, anatomic pathology data, and the requesting clinical data. So here in this screen, you're setting your inclusion and exclusion criteria. You're selecting the various sites, perhaps, that you want to leverage if you're carrying this out in federated fashion. This prototype is designed to be used at multiple sites concurrently. And then finally, you get your aggregate statistics, carried out in real time, combination of an anatomic pathology system and a plurality of middleware solutions that are really off the shelf now in terms of their design to outside clinical repositories. Other middleware venues, sophisticated management reporting, educational support, consultation tools for intramural and extramural practice needs, regulatory compliance, and finally, as I've alluded to a little bit earlier, Lean Six Sigma 5S support. Again, things that are not intrinsically present in the typical AP system, at least in this year, but that will change perhaps in the short term. But while we're waiting for those things to become standard modules, middleware is a very elegant way of attaining those. So I mentioned this earlier, the Project ATMR, or Anatomic Pathology Middleware Electronic Repository. I think there really is a need to have a public dialogue, an ongoing effort to make tools available to end users to experiment with their home systems. And so I'm going to put out under the GNU public license, which means you can use them without royalty, and you can make derivative works if you so choose, but you can't sell those. So this stays in the public domain for any use whatsoever. And the hope is that this critical mass of tools will generate interest in AP middleware and generate increased availability and utility and a repertoire of capabilities. And this sort of ties into our overall mission at Informatics at University of Michigan. When Jay asked me to join 2 years ago, he wasn't just interested in generating value for the department, but for generating a set of tools and capabilities that could help informatics and pathology wherever there might be a need. And so this is actually completely consistent with our department's mission of trying to take pathology informatics not just to a level that helps us, but to a level that helps many individuals, many sites, and the practice of pathology at large. And to that effect, what better way to do that than through public and open dialogue and exchange of freely available tools that are not encumbered by proprietary restrictions or trade secrets. So at that, I'll just conclude and let at the conclusion of Lab Infotech Summit, we will have a link available for where that repository is pointed to, which will be within our department. And I hope that this will be the beginning of meaningful discussion and development in middleware and not just the end of another 45-minute presentation. And I'll take questions. Thanks very much. That's a great question. How would we cost justify such investment and effort and resources? There's a number of answers. Perhaps the simplest is just from a perspective of patient care and patient safety. Many of these solutions have unambiguously the goal of reducing error, increasing accuracy. So if you want to make it in just round numbers, what is the cost of one lawsuit due to a patient loss to follow-up versus implementing a sophisticated tracking with middleware that reduces as close to zero as possible the eventuality of such an event occurring. So that's just a hard dollars argument. There's productivity arguments that now doesn't remove FTEs but shifts them, to freeze them up for other value-added positions in the department. So I could say there's many arguments, but the strongest argument I would say is the patient care, patient safety play, because as physicians, that is our number one sworn duty, is to protect the patient. And I think that AP, unlike CP, in many instances, falls short, or at least falls short of what's possible now that such tools exist.
Ray Allen from Los Angeles. I'd like to suggest that maybe the biggest impediment we have is willingness of folks running AP systems and responsible for them to actually take on this technology. There's a number of very useful anatomic pathology middleware solutions from different laboratories presented at meetings and published 15 years ago in the early 1990s. And there was, as far as we can tell, very, very little adoption of that technologies. And these were solutions that cost $50, $500. They were very inexpensive approaches. They didn't require a lot of fancy programming. So the question is, how do we get those in AP departments to say, yeah, I'm actually going to do it, instead of just saying, oh, isn't that interesting?
Well, that's a very good question, Ray. And I guess it begs a higher level question. If you look at the era in which many of these solutions, which you're right, they were very good solutions for their time, and they they're probably very good for now, some of them. But if you look in that era, if it predates the web, there is an impediment to distribution that I think has largely been removed by having this common parlance of exchange of electronic information, which is the web. Hence my hypothesis that a web-based public dialogue for such tools can accelerate the process of discovery and exchange of these tools. And in fact, some of these tools can be the very older tools that you described. We should resurrect them from the literature if they're available and include them in the repository. So you have a very, very good longitudinal oversight of this field. Now you've got a vehicle to resurrect them and put them in a publicly available place. And what better venue than the individuals in this room who are intently interested in anatomic pathology, amongst other things such as CP. So I would guess that maybe it was the fact they were too early for their era. There wasn't a dissemination vehicle. So maybe I'm wrong, but you won't know till you try. So I'm trying again.
Could you comment on the extent to which in the solutions you've described it was necessary to develop custom wrappers and a custom service bus, if for want of a better word? And maybe that's not an issue. Maybe everything is so lightweight that the effort involved in doing so isn't that great. But contrasting that with an approach where we could begin to define standard interfaces that would lead to a more plug-and-play approach, and hopefully that the vendors would be doing the work of writing the wrappers rather than us having to do that ourselves.
Well, you raise a very good point, and the short answer to your question is there's a plurality of complexity, from very lightweight, which is therefore very easy to implement, to more onerous local customization of the generic code. And that reflects the fact that the target interfaces upon which we have within the plurality of vendors is not all the same. So again, harking back to John Gilbertson's comment about standards, we really need standards at least on one aspect of the AP systems. It doesn't have to be everywhere, but the radiologists have recognized this with DICOM, which is the message exchange layer. We need to have the way that information goes in and out of anatomic pathology or clinical pathology systems be based on a common service-oriented architecture. And I would surmise, and some people might shoot me for saying this, that architecture ought not to be HL7 2.x. It might be 3.x when that gets ready, but not 2.x. Or it could be simply an XML schema which has been agreed upon by normative groups that are concerned with such interfaces. In fact, if you look at the utilization of 3.x in Australia, which is constrained, unlike in the US, is highly effective. So HL73.x, which is an XML-based interchange model, can be effective. I think the rate-limiting step, though, is just picking it one interface and agreeing to it as a specialty. It has worked for radiology. I am sure it can work for pathology, and specifically anatomic pathology. It will require two things: users, us as pathologists, to demand this of the vendors, and vendors to acquiesce to this request and generate a consortial industry-wide standard. Not standards, but standard. And until that happens, you're absolutely right. There's no such thing as an ultimately lightweight bolt-on. There will be variability with varying degrees of complexity. But you can try, as you might, to make some tools quicker than others. And that's what these pilot tools are designed to do, to make it lightweight and easy where possible.
My question might be related to the last one and the earlier question about ROI. I was wondering, for a department that doesn't have a big IT support staff, you know, one of the attractions of off-the-shelf, you know, products is that while they may not do all the things you want to do, you don't have to have a large staff to support them. So I was wondering if, for a department that's looking at sort of the middleware model for solving their IT needs, you know, what kind of staffing, do you have any guidelines, or can you give us some ideas about what kind of horsepower you need in terms of an IT department within your pathology division?
That's an excellent question, and it turns out that the answer is not as bad as you think it might be. It's a question of quality over quantity. So one skilled web/services programmer can bolt on any of these tools very, very quickly. And in this modern age, fortunately, especially with the downturn in the economy, there's not as much shortage of these talented people as there were in the past. So is it super easy right now? No, because there's a plurality of interfaces that one must learn, and then even if the tools are standardized, the targets to which they attach are not. So there is some discovery. But there is fortunately a limited repertoire of things to which you can attach. So through a public consortial effort such as this, such as like what works for user groups for any one vendor, the hypothesis that is with incremental discovery and knowledge, that plurality of targets for any given middleware solution would have incremental numbers of solutions posted so that others could use it. But to the immediate predicate question of how difficult is it, it's having the right person. In an institution, really, you really need more than one person because you don't want to be single-threaded. But that point aside, the complexity level is such now with interfacing one system than another, it's not intractable in the setting of not having a team of 20 people. So I wouldn't be completely adverse to doing it as a small group if you have a plan that involved maybe consultative groups, for example. So I think it's within reach.
With regard to the federated architecture model, your points about the benefits are very well taken. There's one area I'm not clear on how the federated model works with very well, and that's the clinical decision support with expert rules that now have to play across multiple disciplines and across multiple systems. And how do you deal with that in a web-based just-in-time environment?
So this is a question that has come up really in every discussion I've had with system architects. It's the right question to ask. And it turns out you don't have to fight federation to answer that question. So the use of the federation tool is for where the data lives, not where it is processed. So there are certain clinical questions, for example, that are integrative questions based on rules that would live perhaps at the hospital information system level, the EHR level. So once the data is aggregated in real time, that rules engine can live at the same level as the aggregation tool. And in fact, the solution is you don't put those at the ancillary level because no ancillary level has the single view. It's the aggregation. What the aggregation doesn't have in the federated model is all the data itself. It has the access to the data. So I would say that the solution to that is you put the rule-based inference engines where they ought to be for the level of integration, but you simply shift data duplication now to single source of truth. So you're not deprecating the central EHR from the perspective of clinical decision support. You're just taking away the fact that it's a reduplication of the other ancillary systems. Does that answer?
Yeah.
So I think the central EHR has a role. And Bruce is telling me our time is up, but thanks for the very elegant dialogue.